throw rocks at his car.
So can I jump in with a question right away? Because this is a little off what everybody else is going to be asking. I write for the Jewish Light, mm-hmm. and a significant part of this film and part of Bobby Fischer's story is his anti-Semitism, the conspiracy theories, despite the fact that he's apparently had Jewish heritage. And I was glad to see that you did address, you didn't avoid that in the film. Can you talk to me about writing the script and making sure you included that in the right way, which I think you did?
Oh, great. Thank you. Well, to do this movie was my idea. I just start at the beginning, and it was something that occurred, I'm sad to say, during my lifetime, so I remember it, and I remember how important it was, and to me, Bobby Fischer, at the time, was this great Jewish American hero. I'm Jewish, my parents are Holocaust survivors, so, you know, it's something that, you know, I found great pride in it, and so I decided to do a movie on him, even knowing, in a way, what had happened to him over the years. But I just recall that summer was the most remarkable summer in terms of importance, in terms of a chess game, you know, just captivating the world. When I started this project in 2004, Bobby, at the time, was, I believe, in Japan. And about to leave, because shortly after I started it, he was arrested. There was a time, there were about 4 years there where Bobby was still alive and still, you know, communicating to the world at large his anti-Semitism and anti-Americanism and all of that. So there was concern about doing a movie about him, and the question is, how do you portray this? I think our feeling was, you know, this is a story about a remarkable human being. He's certainly, has certain mental problems and issues, and that's something that we need to show, and we need to show it as accurately as possible. I consulted with several psychiatrists and experts on what he might have had in terms of his mental illness to make sure that it progressed in as clear a way as we could have made it to seem accurate again. But so that was something we had to address. I mean, it's just very much a part of him, as much as the early part of him is just the rise of his, you know, seeing his genius and seeing him take over the chess world in a way. It was important to do it. At one point, I actually consulted with the rabbi that's a friend of mine and said, you know, I just want to make sure this isn't going to be, I'm not going to deify what Bobby Fischer believed in. We're deify is not the right word, but we're not supporting him in saying that he was perfect in any way, and that we had to show him warts and all. And the fact that he was Jewish is not purportedly. I mean, it was his mother was Jewish and his biological father was Jewish as well. So the question is, where did this come from? The movie doesn't really answer that because I don't think anybody knows, but it raises a lot of interesting questions and discussion.
Didn't that get much worse as his life went on after 1972?
Yeah, so I mean, much, much worse.
And you address it a little bit at the end in the addendum.
Right.
And some of that footage is kind of startling.
Right.
Yeah. I think you can make a whole other movie about his life.
About what?
A sequel.
What the Bobby the later years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But there's no question that you had to address it. The seeds of it were there. There were issues of things that he had said, you know, anti-Semitic comments that had come out earlier. And he was difficult in many ways, and that was, you know, part and parcel with his mental problems. So
I thought it was great that you included his sister saying, but we're Jewish, you know,
right.
Because that it would express
mm-hmm.
for many Jewish people the outrage of somebody embracing
right.
that anti-Semitism.
Actually, I think his anti-Semitism was directed towards the conspiracy theory rather than Jews at large, because there was
right.
a period in his life where he stayed for a full year with a Jewish family. The Polgar sisters, the famous Polgar sisters, who are all Jewish Jewish, you know, wearing a Star of David, all of them.
Right,
and he stayed in Budapest with them for a year. And when I asked, because they're friends, what, you know, how are they dealing with that issue, Susan, the older sister, said, you know, we're not bringing it up. And a year later when he left, I said, well, what happened? He said, well, we brought it up.
Well, so there, you know, he's the best kind of anti-Semitic, the one that says, some of my best friends are Jewish. By the way, Paul Marshall, and he's Jewish, was Jewish. So he doesn't say it in the movie, but, you know, he was as well. So there are people
around
him.
But I thought it was good that you tied it in with his mental illness. Instead of just leaving it, it wasn't just a person embracing a conspiracy theory as people do, but that was part of his paranoia, his mental decline.
Yeah, I mean, I also think it was very tied up with his mother, and you know, and it's hinted at only in the movie, but we, you know, again, we don't know. As far as I know, he never saw a psychiatrist and was never officially diagnosed, so we had to do what we could with the research that we had. So.
Speaking of his conspiracy theories, and this is a good question for you, he claims in the film the Russians are cheating. The Russians are stacking the deck. And he wrote a famous article in Sports Illustrated before 1972 called, I think, the Russians are cheating at chess. How much of that was in his head? Was there some truth to that?
Of course there's truth to that. Because in any competition, if you have a situation where you don't even know, but it's possible that your competition is colluding, then you are at a disadvantage by definition, whether or not they are. So just the possibility, if there's six Russians playing and only, you know, one American, and they could just, you know, lose games to each other to bring up one of the players to win, and then you see one of them winning, you think, well, did that happen for a reason, or did that happen by accident?
Isn't it true that that was... In part, they were able to do that because it was a round-robin format. And then they changed the rules after, which is why Bob, because of his article and his campaign, to change it. And he succeeded in getting it changed to a pyramid format so that couldn't happen.
Fischer was the first chess professional. He basically, I mean, chess players are extremely indebted to him because he created a professional chess. Before him, there was no professional chess. He not only created it, he demanded it, and he changed rules. People are using his rules right now with the clock, with all kinds of things. He was always thinking about the game. So he is a very, you know, interesting character.
Did you meet him?
I had the occasion twice to... when I was fighting for the World Championship and I qualified from U.S. to play in a tournament, a mutual friend of ours told him about that, and he said, you know, I'll be glad to prepare me and another player from U.S. And then I made a mistake in a sense. I said, well, yeah, that's great. I have a budget, because he wanted like $5,000 to prepare. And I said, I have a budget, you know, by the American Chess Foundation to prepare us. But then he came back and said, what? It's run by Jews? No, I'm not doing it.
Amazing.
That was one thing. And the other thing is in 91, I was president of the U.S. Chess Federation, and same friend said he's ready to play a young upcoming player who later became world champion, Vishy Anand. And this is 91. And I said, well, you know, what does he need? He said, well, he needs a computer and a database. And I said, okay, that can be done. We send him a computer and some database games. He didn't play, but he played the following year, the return match with Boris Spassky. Mm-hmm.
What about Spassky? Did you know him?
Oh, I know him. Yeah, very well.
He's still around.
Still around. He had a heart attack, but he's recovering. Yeah, well, Bobby, when Spassky visited Fischer's grave in Iceland, he said, I want to be buried next to him.
Oh, wow.
So
wow. Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't know that.
Surprised they didn't put that in the movie. That would have been
greater, you know, but there was no chess. Unlike Tiger Woods, I mean, I think he did much more. Because he really just said no, you know, and there is a reason for that, because before that there was a Soviet supremacy, so the Soviets didn't care how much they're earning, because everything was taken by the sports committee, whatever they earned was just commandeered by the chess, the sports ministry of Soviet Union.
Yeah, you misunderstood me. I meant from a pop culture point
from
of view.
From a pop culture,
chess was hot. Everybody.
Oh my God!
To play
chess. You had to play chess.
That's
everybody was.
Why do so many great chess players come from Russia historically?
It's a very simple explanation. It was financed because it was considered that this is a way to prove that, you know, communism is a good ideology because, you know, we're smarter because we play card chess. You know, and actually now that that has receded, you know, you see top players from all over the world, and a couple of people from Russia, but, you know, but it's not like, it's not, there's no dominating role anymore.
But isn't it part of the culture, too?
Of course, it became part of the culture, but it's also becoming part of the culture in India and China and Norway, obviously, because of Magnus Carlsen, so... And here in the States, too. I mean, it's being
sometimes it does take those kind of personalities and winning, and then it, you know, you have great players coming through and teachers, and, you know, you foster.
I think history is made by individuals, and certainly right. Fischer was an individual that made chess, you know, put chess in a completely different plane.
Yeah. Well, how old were you when you started playing?
I was six, and in fact, I learned chess when I was seven, and I was playing in Estonia, which, of course, back then was Soviet Estonia, and Estonians didn't really like that. So when I was learning chess and playing, and people would say, oh, this is our new Bobby Fischer. They would not say, this is our new Boris Spassky. They said, this is our new Bobby Fischer, because they kind of didn't like Soviet Union. So like, okay, this is who to aspire to. It's to Bobby Fischer we have to aspire to. And so it's interesting, this phenomenon.
Why were you drawn to it? How did you just take to the
You know, my grandparents played it. I learned it, and I immediately just loved it.
So for the casting process, how involved were you with that, and how you ended up settling on Tobey Maguire, who, in my opinion, honestly steals the film and gives one of the best performances he ever has?
Yeah. Well, I went to Tobey immediately when in 2004, when I pitched the idea to these two writers that I wanted to work with. We worked out a story and you know, a whole pitch. And then met with Tobey. I mean, when I looked at the list of, you know, that's what we do as producers, we make lists. So I made a list of actors that it could be, and, you know, that obviously Tobey was on that list. He didn't have all the physical characteristics, but in certain pictures, he looked a lot like Bobby in
a
way.
Who else was on the list?
Oh, God, I can't remember right now. That's, yeah. You know, the list, you know, it's the kind of thing that, you know, that was over 10 years ago. And Tobey at the time was exactly the age of Bobby, or 1 year younger than Bobby was when he played in Reykjavik. So I thought, oh, it was perfect. We'll just make it in the next couple of years. And he'll be perfect. But so I went to Tobey and involved him immediately. And he, you know, we went and pitched it to Sony Pictures, and they bought it. So that was where we developed it for like 9 years. And at the top of my list for Boris Spassky was Liev Schreiber from day one. I mean, I thought he was a doppelganger, and there was no question. You know, a little bit of the hair, and that was it. He had the perfect look, and he's an amazing actor. With Tobey, you know, it's interesting because Bobby was 6'1", 2", you know, something like that. 6'2", Tobey, not so much. So, but Tobey has very long, elegant fingers. And, you know, it's really, the way Bobby handled the chess pieces was very unique. And you just really felt like, oh my God, he could really do that. I mean, you know, the camera can make you act tall. And Tobey acts tall, but Tobey also has these qualities that you really want. I mean, he's very endearing. He's got that humor, which Bobby had. And yet he can certainly summon up, you know, just fiery attitude and anger that you need to be able to play that part. The other actors, I mean, that was during the normal casting process as after Ed Zwick came aboard. You know, it was just a normal casting process.
How do you, because I found the film incredibly powerful, incredibly moving, and I know nothing about chess. How do you make the film accessible to those who don't know anything about chess?
I guess I should ask you that question. I mean, the fact is it's not a movie about chess. It's a movie about this person, this human being and his.
Last question, guys.
Okay.
It's a movie about a man who's got amazing brilliance, but amazing odds against him mentally. Mm-hmm. And the question, it's really about his journey and his struggle. And also the times. I mean, to me, I always thought it was going to be a Cold War thriller. Mm-hmm. I never said, oh, I'm working on a chess movie. It was like, I'm working on a Cold War thriller, and it happens to be set in the world of chess.
Yeah, it says World War III on a chessboard. That's a line from the mm-hmm. film.
That's a line mm-hmm. from the film, thanks to Steve Knight.
You were the yes. chess advisor on this. I like that you included that they did chess games by just trading moves. They'd speak the moves in the board to do that.
Came part of the
that.
Dialogue, yeah.
And but tell me about your part in as a chess advisor on this.
Well, actually
yeah, we had another chess advisor. We shot the movie in Montreal.
Okay.
So everything that looks like it's everywhere in the world except for one day and a half of exteriors in Reykjavik, in Iceland, outside of Reykjavik, and 2 days in Los Angeles to shoot the beaches in Santa Monica and the Beverly Hilton Hotel. Other than that, everything was in Montreal. And so we had Richard Berube, who's head of the Quebec Chess Federation, I believe. He was with us every minute. He started with us in pre-production, helping to train our actors to make the moves. He was there to set up every board and every move for every shot. So he was vitally important to us, making sure we had the right pencils and the right everything. I mean, he from soup to nuts, he was with us. And so he could answer every question we had. And, you know, the whole point was in making it as accurate as it could possibly be.
Now, chess is a little two-person strategy game played on a table. Were you concerned about it being cinematic, or did you kind of leave that in the hands of the director?
Not at all. Yeah. I mean, I've seen movies that are cinematic that are about a guy blinking an eyelash, you know? I mean, it's how it's shot. We had a brilliant cinematographer, and Ed is a director that makes movies bigger than you can imagine. So we're only constrained by our budget. But even then, I felt like it was incredible.
Our role was to promote, to bring the film into the chess audience.
Okay, so how did the film impress you?
It impressed me. I thought it was very true to life. I was involved in my chess career. My first coach was Bobby Fischer's coach and a friend and like a father figure who, when his mother was around somewhere, he was basically staying with the Collins family, Jack Collins, who's the coach. And I mean, there was like this heartfelt love for Bobby from his coach that, you know, I always felt that, I mean, he was always revering him, you know, when I was 12 years old, you know, 13 years old. So I felt it was very true to life.
And as someone who's not very good, you made me feel so much better with the film, knowing that there are so many different ways that you can do it. I was astounded at what is all involved that you do as far as
it's amazing. But it's more a battle of wills and outwitting and I mean, like most sports played at the highest level, it's about strategy, endurance. And, you know, and talent. Well, raw talent.
Talent.
And practice. I mean, Bobby, you know, practiced 24/7 for many, many years.
Was it fictionalized at all?
You know, not really. You know, I mean, you might find little moments.
It's hard. It's even hard to say because, you know, some of it
you don't
know exactly.
Well, you're not in the rooms to hear every conversation, but the big event, the things that happen, x-raying the chairs, all of those things were in it. And the idea was to make it as accurate as possible. Obviously, we're making a movie, not a documentary.
Right.
So there are times where you have to take some license and, you know, you combine a few characters and move things around. Very, very little. But I mean, I at the beginning of the movie, it says this is based on a true story. And there are lawyers that vet that and insurance companies that vet that and allow you to say that if it isn't, you have to say it's inspired by events or whatever. So this was based on a true story. Basically, I wanted it to say all this shit really happened.
Well, and I thought it was a terrific film.
Yeah,
thank you.
It was fabulous.
Because it's so, some of it is so ludicrous, you can't believe this happened. Mm-hmm. And yet even more, I mean, that we, you know, him taking months to actually go to Reykjavik, we couldn't possibly put that in the movie. So.
Right, right.
A little bit of condensing.
Well, thank you both very, very much.
Thank you so much. Enjoy the turn of the year. Very good.
So are kids in Pop going to see this movie?